from Language of the Heart. And so I was what I thought, but I'm going off tonight. So I just wanted to make sure my brain was there with us to share her experience, strength, and hope.
Hello, my name is Lynn. I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Lynn.
Given the gift of sobriety on December 8th, 2021. And thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here today. And congratulations and happy birthday to everybody who's celebrating tonight. I was talking with my sponsor earlier, and she was asking me, you know, how are you feeling? And, you know, this is the second time I've had the opportunity to share my story. I was like, I'm good. I'm so good. I'm good. And I was thinking, there's like 100 people at birthday night and Language of the Heart tonight, and it's Labor Day weekend. I'm like, I'm so fine. And then I started getting a little nervous because I was thinking, I mean, maybe it'd be nice if there's like one familiar face. And then I heard there was going to be a familiar face for sure. And I was like, okay, now I'm really fine. But then, you know, what happens? I start thinking, which I do way too much all the time. But then I started thinking like one person in the room to kind of know isn't really going to be enough. But then I remembered, oh, wait, Mary, I just know her too. So it started to become more comfortable. Then a couple other people from the group were going to come. So I thought, that's great. And even though I should trust them all to be here, I'm like, it's like if they come, because a million things could happen, who knows what. And I thought, still okay. Harley was going to be there. I was asked one more time, how are you feeling? And I thought, I'm good. I'm good. I'm really good. And I walk into the IHOP where some people were having dinner. And I realized, like, already there's like 15 people at the table. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, there's a lot of people here. But I feel like we're all friends already. If you're at IHOP, that was a super friendly group. Plus, Shannon, hello, Jennifer. Also, I can't remember your name. I already forgot it. But Pam and other people from Serenity Sisters Weekend, hello. So I'm fine. I'm fine. another thing I said to my sponsor when she asked if I was ready, I said, yeah, I'm just going to go and share what happened, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And she said, she goes, well, you know, I think the big book actually says it's what you were like. And then what happened? And then what? And she kind of pauses a notice to give me a chance to catch up and answer the question or like what I am like now. And then I kind of paused and thought, what I was like, I guess a little bit different when you think about it that way. And that's one of the wonderful things that I've learned about from other people like you and sponsors and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is how to think and behave in a way that's honorable and in a way that connects me closer to my higher power and in a way that keeps me sober. So I was born at the Edna Gladney home in Fort Worth, which was a home for women, girls in my case, who were going to make a plan for adoption. So my birth mother was 15, and my birth parents tried to get pregnant. It just wasn't happening for them. So they make a plan for adoption. It's like, it takes way longer time than you think it would. But they make this plan, they go through all the stuff. I am born, and they don't really bring me home right away, but then when they can, they're able to bring me home. And by the time my parents are in court to make the adoption final, guess what? She's pregnant, which evidently happens a lot. I mean, that just shows you how much like the mind is so, like we're all, everything's all connected. And so thus, my brother and I are really close in age, really close in age. And, you know, my parents did a great job. I have this wonderful family, not perfect. They are too human. For the longest time, I really thought, you know, how did I get here? I mean, there's a lot of times when I've asked myself, how did I get here? here. But by that, how'd I get here? It meant, how did I get to a place where I became an alcoholic? Like, when did this happen? Why did it happen? It doesn't make any sense. Nothing in this life, like, should have brought me here. And thus, I learned at some point that despite all of the exerted hours that I put toward trying to figure out exactly why, that really just didn't matter. It just is. And so that was actually a big obstacle that I had to get past when I first went to the roots of Alcoholics Anonymous. So just because it doesn't matter why, and just because my parents did a great job, that did not keep me from experiencing, oh, lo, the woes of being an adopted human, which you will come to learn is just the whole situation that is Lynn, just the whole thing. And there were some things that happened that maybe contributed a little extra to me feeling that way. Some things were just how life was. I mean, this was 53 years ago. Adoption was a little bit different then than it is now, certainly in terms of how it's known and thought of. So I always knew I was adopted, but my parents, it was something not to be spoken about. And it wasn't, I internalized that as, oh, it's embarrassing, I'm bad. You know, something's bad about this and thus about me. And their intention was just to protect me. Like, you're just like any of our other kids, which is really noble. But I didn't, like so many other things, accept it in that manner. And we didn't really talk about it or why. So I tend to, if I'm going to make an assumption, sadly, it's often not a positive assumption, particularly if it's about myself. I mean, you know, you can't really play into the self-centeredness and all the drama that is the situation that is lit if you're going about life in other ways. So I remember going into school one day, and the whole second grade was all because there was one friend who was the daughter of my mom's very close friend saying, Lynn was adopted. And I just thought, oh my gosh, you know, the world's falling apart. This is terrible. Other things like suggesting that I go to the counselor at school and my mom being upset because it's just because you're adopted, and, you know, me being forced to sit there, but I'm not going to say anything because, like, I'm not supposed to. What do I do? This all kind of gets all wrapped up in me trying to figure out what is my role in the family. There's kind of one last straw that I've really thought, okay, I have to, like, really solidify my role in the family. Also happened when it was around second grade. And that was, some of you might remember, there was news report after news report of these children who had been adopted, whose biological family was, they were coming to get them. And it was a horrible situation in that one family didn't, they were told their child was, had passed, and another family, like, no one's in the wrong here in terms of the families. I mean, somebody is in the whole system of that. But I saw this on TV and I was scared. And it was through watching this news story that I learned that you paid for me. Like, there's money exchange that happens here. And my family was on a budget. We were constantly having, you know, the covert issues with money. And I just thought, this is terrible. Like, this is really terrible. It's a terrible situation all the way around. And I, that night in bed, was crying. My mom was in the hallway and she comes in and she's, oh, honey, what's wrong? And I'm going to pay debt back someday. And, you know, and she's like, Lynn, don't be ridiculous. So we're not really going to have, like, go into the conversation, which I probably did need at the time. And so we moved on. But it was something else that I took inside of myself that really showed me my role is I will be perfect. I will be good. I will be the problem solver. I will be I'm not going to cause the problem in this. I'm going to be the helpful one. If anyone needs any help with anything in this family, right here, I'm your girl. So that worked out pretty well. We had to get the best grades ever. I was always the one that Lynn is so kind. She is so sweet. My brother was so smart. He was a big troublemaker. But I have a sister who's 7 years younger than I am. So that was kind of like starting all over in terms of birth order. But I would do things like my mom and her mom did not get along, and I cannot stand it. I cannot stand it if there's conflict between people. Like I feel everywhere within the depths of my soul, I feel obligated to help fix it. Like I just has to be, otherwise it's like I'm itching from the inside out. And so I would fix like adult relationships when I was a kid, and I got a lot of attention and appreciation for that, which I loved and I still do. So I always had this little bit of a concern that I needed to be careful with like drugs and alcohol for two reasons. One is I knew I was adopted. Who knows what? And the other thing was the DARE program totally worked on me. Completely and totally worked on me. I was the one it worked on. Brain on drugs. And I like, it was just not, I'm not taking any chances. So still again, I'm like, how this ever happened to me? Well, I got married and I was so thrilled because I got to start out my perfect little family. Now, the guy I married probably didn't really want to get married, nor did I really want to marry him. But we lived together in sin, which was bad, especially because his family was Catholic. And my family, I just had to get out of there. There was too much. I had too much responsibility in this household. I ended up being responsible for a lot of stuff. And I was mad. I just couldn't take it anymore. And so I moved in with my boyfriend, who was a mess. And married him because we can't just live together and not get married. That's even worse than living in sin in the first place. So good Lord. So we get married after a lot of, you know, those guilty, gentle, I did not say that, things that you can say. That's, yeah, you really did say it, just not, that's me. And so eventually we did get married and all the family was happy. Everyone was so happy and I was so happy, and we were going to start our family. I graduated from school and couldn't wait to have kids. And we had kids and daughter was born. I thought, oh, miracles really do happen. She was just beautiful. And I'm so excited to have someone that looked like me. So I really don't look a lot like anyone in my family. But my mom's mom, my mean mama, she would always say something to me that made me feel especially proud, which was she gets that from her mean mama. And I thought, I love her. She's my favorite person because no one says I get anything from them in this family. How wonderful. So I have children. We have children. And then I'll cut to the chase here on this part. We get divorced. And so very dishonest things happened. And I was left with a lot of debt because my name had been forged on some things. And it was one of those situations where I hung on and hung on and hung on and hung on and hung on, because that's also what I do, because I don't want to have any issues. And I hung on way too long and it made it way worse. And I just thought I have failed. Like my whole, like what's going to happen now? My whole life, like this is not the perfect thing that's supposed to happen. I'm going to be the one feeling to get divorced. And I hadn't told anyone about all the problems that were happening because I was too busy always trying to show people how great everything was and how perfect everything was and how much I didn't really need the help of other people. And meanwhile, I'm really dying inside and I'm isolated and I'm alone and there is no help for me. And then I start drinking. because I cannot cope with, it's so bad, I don't care about Dare. That's how bad it was. That's how bad it was. And so I thought, like, the movies and the drama of TV don't do us any favors, because I legitimately thought that the way that alcoholism works is, you know, you're an alcoholic because you take a drink and then you're flat out on the floor and you can't give up the drink. And that's what an alcoholic means. So I kind of thought, after I had that, you know, a couple glasses of wine, and I got up the next day and I was okay, and I went, you know, did all the things, that I was kind of clear. So this was exciting because I had finally found the answer. And, oh my Lord, what took me so long to get here? Suddenly I felt like I could be myself. I felt free. And I went from wine to hard liquor really fast. I went from wine to scotch. So scotch and whiskey and like all that stuff. Scotch was, it was so bad. It was so good, but it was so bad. And you know how it goes. Before long, they say that there's that, for some of us, that there's some point where it's just like you drink yourself into the whole pickle thing, you know, and you can't be unpickled. I remember learning that in detox once. I've had that pleasure 4 times. And so, I was forever trying to figure out, when did that happen? Because it seemed so fine for a while. You know, I would be able to, my kids would be with their dad and I could like go bananas on a weekend, which I did. And then, I mean, I might have felt kind of crummy. I mean, I did feel kind of crummy. And then, but I got over it and went to work and did all the things I was supposed to do. And I was a very perfect employee as well, I want to have you know. And at some point, I got married again, and it's like, oh, that's great. Oh no, that's so bad. You know, there's this old hee-haw. I don't know if you ever watched that. Oh, that's so good. Oh, that's so terrible. Well, I got divorced. Oh, that's so bad. I got married. Oh, that's so good. And with me, it's either like really great and good, or it's really horrible and terrible, and the world's falling apart. So, you know, that's how life is for me. And I got married, that's so good, but then there was a custody battle. Oh, that's so bad. And being in court, I can't believe I'm one of those people, because I'm this perfect person. How do I end up in court with people telling lie after lie after lie about what a terrible, horrible mom and everything else in the world that I am? It was awful. And I thought, you know what? I'm so glad I have alcohol. I'm so glad I have alcohol. And I started drinking anytime there was going to be any contact with my ex or his family. So that meant, you know, the birthday parties, the school stuff, the blah, blah. I became one of those people who's going to be drunk at a kid's birthday party. Yes. Right on. I was one of those people thinking, good God, why is there not a bar in the Chuck E. Cheese? I was. So it wasn't surprisingly, because life happens. And so I just kept going back to this wonderful thing that I had learned that is the answer. And it begins to get a little out of control. My husband was a drinker too. He's 4 years sober. So he got sober before I did. And I began to do all the things that we do. So I became really creative and proficient for a while at hiding my alcohol, because Lord, I didn't want anyone to know this was an issue, nor did I really accept or think it was an issue for a very long time. Because I was just pretty insistent, like, this is not me. That cannot be me. So a common thing for me for a long period of time, way too long, I would think, okay, what I have to do is I'll have to learn how to manage myself, because I'm a very much, I will be in control and am in control person of you and everything else, as evidenced by the video I just recovered of my daughter's 2-year-old birthday party, which is when I learned this is not new behavior. Way old. There was like signs way back when before I even ever touched alcohol. But do you know what a Demitasse cup is? Do you know what those, like, it's teeny tiny little, like, little teacup-y looking thing? I had some of those from my grandparent, and I would think, I know I'm going to manage this. I am going to make it really hard for myself for me to be able to get to, you know, the big container of scotch that I have. And this is how I'm going to do it. I'm going to pour myself a Demitasse cup worth. Sit it right here, you know, so it's innocent looking there. And then I'm going to take the scotch bottle and I'm going to step up to, it's coming down from the container upstairs and it's going underneath all the stuff and that goes back on and then step, that goes back up, come back over. I mean, and then I think, of course, like, well, I don't know, like one little Demitasse cup, that's not even really a drink. That's not really even a whole drink, right? So, you know, there I am again. And believe it or not, I would go through the whole episode, you know, maybe twice, maybe three times. And then I would, you know, once you have a little bit, then it's like, well, this is just silly. this is a big old waste of time. And it's not really very safe for me to be, you know, stepping out and make a wise decision. So that was one of the things I did. And then here's what's really shocking. I would go through all of that only to wake up the next day and realize, wait, I could not have drank that whole thing. I could not have drank that whole thing because that is disgusting. I could not have drank that whole thing. And then because I can't really remember, because I am a blackout drunk, I do a lot of stuff that I do not remember. And I mean, I tear the house apart looking for what I know I must have put somewhere. And it's just a safe little place, because that's another thing I would do a lot, is I would hide things in safe little places, all kinds of places. And my husband just kept thinking, and he's an alcoholic. He knows. And he even gets to the point where he's like, how can there be more? There could not be more. Where is this coming from? Why are you still drunk? You stopped drinking 2 days ago. So when my daughter moves out, you know, things have gotten worse when she moved out of the house, and she graduated and moved off. And and then I have the opportunity to learn some things. I go and meet my birth mother. And so this is a scary and exciting. They have this like a Texas registry and you could register. And so we did that thing and her name was on it. My name was on it. So we had this whole deal. Went to Nacogdoches. And we look so much alike. Bizarre. I am just not used to have people looking that much like me. It's weird. And she's so sweet too. She's the sweetest little thing you ever saw. And so we're chatting, and I didn't ask, by the way. I did not ask why. I was just assuming she was 15. And then I learned about her family, and I put two and two together and figured out. Now I know what happened, and, you know, just kind of put together two and two. But she shared with me that she had been raped, and that was how she had gotten pregnant. And she, you know, these people that corroborate her story. And man, that made me mad. I mean, I was in shock at first. I did not know what to do with it. Actually, didn't know what to do with it for a very long time. But I thought, talk about building your resentment. I'm like, why? Why would you tell somebody that? Why would you tell them? That doesn't mean I would have been really mad if I had learned about it at another time. And then I would have probably been saying, how dare you? That's my life. How dare you not tell me? But I was so mad. But I'm not the kind of person that really lets another person know if I'm mad. I am the silent scorner, which I didn't even know was a thing until I first came into the rooms of AA. And someone, and I remember the first time someone mentioned silent scorning, and I was like, like, oh my God, that is me. I do that. She didn't know it's silent scorning, which is what usually happens because we don't live close. I was perfectly nice. I moved off. I didn't, you know, write quite as much. But I carried that deep. And I drank it away. And I just felt terrible about myself. I mean, I already felt, I always felt, you know, there's all these conversations about these things. And I always felt like, I don't care if I came into the world or not, because I wouldn't know. I mean, it's just not a, and then there's so many times when I just thought, I don't, like, why was I born? Why was I born? Like, what a waste. I just remember thinking, and then when I learned that, I thought, I was disgusted with me. And so I drank even more, and this is already a couple detox, maybe one detox session. So it's okay. I drink, and this is how I deal with it. I drink, and that, all of that disgust that I felt about myself and resentment that I had toward her, I just took it, and I'd be like, I have this little place. I can just put things, and just I pretend like it's not even there. What's weird is, I don't know if it's in the same spot or if it's a different location, but I also have this other thing that I can do, which is I can somehow, like, not going to drink. I'm sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then still go to the liquor store, but somehow not tell myself that's what I'm doing. and then end up back home with this alcohol, and I'm in the middle of drinking it, just thinking, oh gosh, that happened. I don't like that. You know, I've always wondered if that happens to anybody else. And so I have this ability that I think is so clever. And so, I don't know, like such a good thing. And it's really, it's such an unhealthy thing about me, like both sides of that. So things just getting going from bad to worse. And I have this one instance when I end up in a rehab, and what happened that time was I'm very much an isolator. I'm not a go to bars and drink kind of person. I wasn't. I'm a go to a hotel room, tell people you're going to work, buy a bunch of liquor and drink yourself to death kind of person. I'm a, oh, good husband's gone. Oh, I'm at a conference. Oh, I'm supposed to present at the conference. I'll go present because I'm not going to anything else. So the stories about Linnet conferences are not public ones. They are, Brad's wondering, where's my wife and how come she never came home? So I have an incident and I'm at home and I've had way too much to drink. That was one time. Another time was at hotel time. And I just pretty much decided I was going to drink myself to death because I knew that's how I was going out. I had long given up any other hope. Everything was exhausting. And my husband couldn't find me. It was like the middle of the night. And it ends up being, he calls me. I don't know where I am. He asked me for some landmark. He goes driving around the ATB area looking for my car and on the hotel parking lot, and he finds me. By the time he makes his way into the hotel room, only because it's partially open, he finds me not breathing very well. And so the next time I woke up, I'm in the hospital with a tube. I'm in a tube down my throat. So an ICU, my parents were called, my mom's at my bedside. And you want to know the first thing that I think when I wake up after all this stuff has happened is, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. My mom knows. Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. You know, I was thinking like, oh my gosh, I hope she doesn't tell Libby. Like, that's what's in my head, you know, not like, you almost died. So this is the reason that I ended up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got a sponsor, started doing the things, and I had this great 15 months. No, it wasn't really 15 months. I kind of exaggerated it. It was really like 13 months, maybe 14. But, and like I had other times when I had 100 days, when I had 30 days, when I had 100 days, when I would have all these times and I would think, I'm fixed now. I mean, a whole year. And what happened is, by the way, it doesn't matter what happened, because what really happened is I decided there was this opportunity. My sponsor left AA. And, you know, oh, woe is me. My sponsor is having some, you know, struggles, and she leaves the program. And so I learned the hard way that I'm the one responsible for my program and my sobriety, because, oh, boy, did I think it was totally not my fault. And I thought I had it. I really did. I thought reset, brain reset, body reset, the neurons were good. Like, it's been rewired up there. It's all fixed. And it was not. And I went back out, and I went back out hard. Not pretty. And it also was not very long, because at this point, oh, I learned all the lessons the hard way. Oh, my God. So it, as dumb as some of the things always sound, it really is true. The whole, it's doing push-ups the whole time. It really is. And it really was like nothing stopped. I went back and I was like, it was boom. It was no time at all before I was absolutely out of control. And there I was again, having to wake up every 2 hours and have a little drink so I could have some, so I could just not die for an hour. Forget whatever glorious thing happened way back when. That's no longer a thing. Now it's just, how can I not shake and have a heart beating like this and feel like all sweaty and gross and have to go to work the next day? I don't have any choice but to drink and do whatever I need to do to be able to get through the day and leave as quickly as I can and stop at the liquor store and blah, 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 ad nauseum. Literally, actually. But I was disgusted with myself again. And every time I just keep falling lower and lower and lower into how disgusted I can be. And I can't get better. I go back to my home group and I'm welcomed back with open arms, and I'm like, hallelujah, there's a place to return to, and they accepted me, and all the things that you say and you hear are all true, and I get a new wonderful sponsor, and you know, it's like, let's do this. Well, you want to be sober? Yes. And y'all, relapse does not have to be a part of your story, but it's a part of mine. And it was hard in a different way to get sober after going out that hard. And so it's like, I know where the answer is. That was a good thing. I went back out. I knew where the answer was. So I didn't dilly-dally too much getting there. But I still had all those issues. Those things that were back here, they were still there. And I didn't bring them out for my first sponsor, because I didn't want to go there. So I didn't bring them out. I thought, no one's business. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have anything to do with alcohol, because I get to decide, because I think I know everything. And I was devastated. And I just thought, I give up on life. I give up on life. And I've heard people say this, and this is how I really felt. I felt like it wasn't that I didn't want to live, but it was absolutely that I could not live this life. And I had already tried, and there is no way out. There is no hope for me. There is no hope for me. And that's the worst, that's the deepest, worst, most devastating feeling to have. And my husband was at work. I'd had a hard time trying to get sober. And I went to a liquor store. It took a lot to get there because I was pretty drunk when I arrived. And so it was, anyway. So I get there, I buy a handle of scotch and drive back into the garage and keep the car running and shut the door and drink. And like, I'm out. And I couldn't believe it when I woke up in the hospital. I could not believe it. And it took me a while to learn that my husband, a long time ago, I guess, there's these little windows that you can get in a garage to put in your garage or anything. So if you want air to get into it. And so there's this window like this and you can open it and close it. So there's like that much open. It was barely open. And I kind of didn't know how to feel about that until he told me that he was watching me die and that he thought I was gone and that that's the only thing that kept me alive. And so I thought, I'm really mad at myself now, you know, and I just decide I give up, like I can't, you know. I'm so mad at myself that I'm going to punish myself by making myself go to Alcoholics Anonymous and do every single stupid, I don't understand it, cliche thing my sponsor asked me to do. And so all the repetition strengths, you know, reconfirms and strengthens and all of the stuff that I would just think, and the newcomers meetings, my goodness, over and over and over and all the stuff. And I'm like, I don't care what you think, Lynn, this is what's going to happen. And lo and behold, it doesn't actually work. So I learned a few things through this process. One was, that sponsor said, you know, I think there's, she did not know, by the way, she didn't know. She's like, I think there's something maybe you're holding back. Maybe it's just because sometimes it's what we do. I don't know. But I'm like sitting, I'm thinking about this stuff, y'all. And I'm like, yeah, there is. So we talk about that whole thing. And I just wasn't going to ever tell anybody about the whole rape thing because I'm like, that does not go with the vision I had of myself. Actually, none of the situation that has led at this point is to do with the vision I had of myself. So, but we talk about it and I can't believe what happened after this. My birth mother, you know, she's only 15 years older than me, so she's not old. And but she gets really, really sick with cancer. And so I get a call that's like she has a few days. And so, and she's not with it. She's not coherent. I'm like, I have this feeling like I know there's something I should do and I just don't want to do it. I know I should. That's the kind of thing my sponsor helped me with. That's the kind of thing we were able to talk through with you and say, pray on it. And I knew what I needed to do, and I went. And I had the most beautiful moment with her. She was at hospice, and so she was in her sister's living room. And she wasn't really, she was so in and out. But she took my hand, and I took hers. And we looked each other in the eye, and that wasn't easy for me, but it wasn't that moment. It was just like, took me in. And she said, I love you. And I said, I love you. And it was almost like that lasted for a few minutes, and then she wasn't even present in the room anymore. You know? My husband was there and witnessed that. And I was like, some kind of miracle happened there. That didn't happen until after I decided I was coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I was going to do all this dumb stuff y'all tell me to do. I got to go to her funeral, and I got to walk into a room with a whole bunch of people that freaked out when they saw me because I look like Lil, by the way. Lil. Isn't that weird? We look so much alike. And so it was a very weird moment, and people kind of were like, whoa. And I was so afraid of what that reaction was going to be, and I didn't plan on going to the funeral, but again, this is how God works. Ended up there, and they were so warm and open, welcoming. Oh, you're Lynn. You're Lynn. Oh, my gosh. We're so glad that you're here. And the funeral at the gravesite, there are a couple things that I always really worried about that I didn't express much of. And one of those things was a absolute shame over my birth mother having gone through what she went through, having birthed me, and then having me be like, big disappointment, drunk, trying to kill herself, lit. And I mean, that's why I couldn't look her in the eye either. And there was some time because I couldn't deal with the stuff that I had to deal with that I wouldn't write her. I did show up to her house once drunk, which wasn't, you know, a good thing to do. And at the burial ground, there were only a couple of us there. And this person who was her husband, on her husband's side of the family, not a blood relation. And she was talk. And I really just thought, this lady just will not be quiet. And she says, oh, this is so weird. She goes, oh, there's something Lil always said. She always wanted to know that you to know that she understood. She always wanted you to know that she understood and that she did not blame you and that she loved you. And here's the weird thing about that. The only person that I had said any of that stuff to my sponsor and my husband. That is it. And my husband was standing there, and my husband is not one to say this kind of stuff, y'all. And he goes, I think that was God. I'm like, there must be a God. I mean, it was beautiful. Now I get to have relationships that are the kind of relationships I never thought I would have with anybody, because I just don't get to have those kinds of relationships. Because who wants to, you know, who wants to be friends with me? Who wants to, you know, now there's like all these awesome people. I get, my whole heart gets all swole up when I walk into a room and I get to see, like, you know, my people. And that feeling of really knowing, like, no joke, people really will step in. And also, here's what's even more the miracle is, I will step in. I know that I will step in. So as I was taking a step, there are a couple of things that I want to mention. One is, I had to go through the process of eventually admitting that I was indeed powerless and could not manage my alcoholism, because I tried, as I told you, that I tried to manage it so many ways. The God thing was a very difficult thing for me. I tend to be an overthinker. And I worried way too much about, I didn't want I was too concerned with what you thought I meant about God, you know? And so I was thinking, I'm going to talk about God, but I don't want her to think that I mean what she thinks. No, I just couldn't take that chance. And guess what? I learned. It doesn't matter what you think I mean when I say God or higher power or however I choose to. And figuring out that it's okay for me to be out in nature and the world, think about the universe, and like I can woo woo all the way I want. That's totally okay. Right? Yes.
Right.
And thank God, because that's the only I had to listen first. I had to be willing and open first. But once I was, I could walk through that door. That had to happen before I was able to do any of the other stuff. Now, I get to take a meeting to Springwood, and it just, the first time I walked in was so, because that's the first place that I went and, you know, spent some extra time. And it's just weird to walk in and walk out of your own volition. It's just awesome. But I was a little scared. But now I've gone a few times, and it's just, it is so powerful to be able to sit there and say, you know, the first time I thought to myself, maybe I have a problem with drinking, was in this room. I could have been this chair, you know, and it really is a blessing. I am all of the corny things that y'all say. They are true. They're those promises that I thought, oh, if only. They're true. I can't believe it. And I'm really happy that I was born.
Thank you.